Hello and welcome to Useful Idiots Monday Morning, where we react to the Sunday morning news shows that we watch so that you don't have to. I'm Katie Halper.
I'm Aaron Mattei. Good Monday morning, everybody. Great to see you with us. Remember to like the stream and share it. And also, if you want to support the show and get bonus content, go to usefulidiotspodcast.com.
Oh, yes. Great content. In fact, I'll even, because I'm so nice, I'll even bring my mic forward. A nice haircut, Aaron. Not to objectify you or anything.
Thank you. I accept your objectification. Well, a lot to get to, including the latest in the genocide in Gaza. I believe as we're recording this, there's going to be a new UN Security Council vote on a ceasefire resolution, which maybe the U.S. won't block, although I believe they watered it down. So maybe we'll get news of that by the end of this episode. But a lot to discuss on that front.
Yes. And as always, we start off with Meet the Press.
This is Meet the Press with Kristen Welker.
Good Sunday morning. Former President Donald Trump's effort to overturn the 2020 election is putting an unprecedented stress test on American institutions ahead of the 2024 election. With the Supreme Court already deciding Trump can remain on the ballot in Colorado, and now weighing whether he has total immunity in prosecution for his election subversion efforts. This week, I spoke exclusively with former Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer, where I asked him about the weight a justice feels while considering these cases that have become central to the presidential election.
That would be a bad name for a song or a memoir, The Weight a Justice Feels.
The way justice feels. Okay.
The weight a justice
feels. Oh, the weight.
Yeah.
I like it.
It's heavy weight you carry when you're a justice.
It's true, justice is heavy.
Justice is heavy, yeah.
Hurts my shoulders.
Somebody in the chat says the weight of the bags of money.
That's true, yeah.
Fair enough.
Can you describe the weight that you felt that one feels as a justice when you are presented with a case in the middle of a presidential election?
It's not just an election. I mean, the court, imagine you were on the court that decided Brown versus Board of Education.
I mean, I'm not sure that that's the best comparison. Integration. Maybe it's slightly hyperbolic.
With whether Donald Trump could be on the ballot?
Yeah,
fair enough. Fair enough.
Hot take from me.
I agree. I share that judgment.
Imagine that you were on the court that had to decide, for example, whether President Nixon was immune from giving, didn't have to turn the tapes over to Archie Cox. Imagine that.
More of my interview with Justice Breyer is coming up. But first, I'll be joined by former RNC chair Ronna McDaniel in her first interview since stepping down as party chair. In full disclosure to our viewers, this interview was scheduled weeks before it was announced that McDaniel would become a paid NBC News contributor. This will be a news interview, and I was not involved in her hiring.
We're going to see more of this. This is a major controversy.
Major story.
I meet the press with the Chuckster returning to Colorado's own network, but They're livid that NBC News hired Ronna McDaniel, the now recently departed chair of the RNC, the same network that has former White House spokesperson Jen Psaki hosting a show, former White House spokesperson Simone Sanders hosting a show,
and former White House spokesperson Nicole Wallace
hosting a show. For the Bush administration. She was the Bush administration. And then also, you know, multiple former CIA and FBI officials.
Right.
But they're drawing a line at Ronna McDaniel, or some people are drawing a line at Ronna.
I mean, Aaron, this reminds me of Brown v. Board of Education. That's the gravity that we're dealing with here. This is like Jim Crow South, this hire.
It really is.
Yeah. I like the way she says she was not involved in her hiring.
I was not involved. Yes. Yes. As if anyone think that, like, the host of Meet the Press was involved in hiring a contributor.
Right.
Yes. Yes.
Probably does happen. I'm sure there's some nudges behind closed doors, but no one thinks that in this case. Should we watch the Chuckster? I mean, the good news is that this is such a this is such a miscarriage of justice that the Chuckster had to weigh in.
He did speak out. He did. He called out his own.
Let's take elephant in the room.
Let me deal with the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
I think our bosses owe you an apology for putting you in this situation, because I don't know what to believe. She is now a paid contributor by NBC News. So I have no idea whether any answer she gave to you was because she didn't want to mess up her contract. She wants us to believe that she was speaking for the RNC when the RNC was paying for
it. As opposed to Chuck Todd, who would never say anything on air just to preserve his contract.
Right.
You know, this is why he gave us years and years of tough questioning of politicians for warmongering and lying to the public.
Yeah.
You know.
In fact, we should have called him Tuck. Tough Chuck.
Tough Chuck, yes.
Tuck. Yeah.
Yes, Tuck. Yes. But Chuck Todd is indignant. I mean, I guess, again, because Donald Trump is not an acceptable member of the ruling elite, everybody else is. Like the Bushes, the Cheneys, the Clintons, you know, it's all one big happy family. But because Donald Trump crosses the line and Ron McDaniels is tied with him, for Chuck Todd, it's a bridge too far.
Right.
So she has credibility issues that she still has to deal with.
Yeah.
Is she speaking for herself or is she speaking on behalf of who's paying her? What, once at the RNC, she did say that, hey, I'm speaking for the party. I get that. That's part of the job. So what about here? I will say this. I think your interview did a good job of exposing, I think, many of the contradictions. And look, there's a reason why there's a lot of journalists at NBC News uncomfortable with this, because many of our professional dealings with the RNC over the last 6 years have been met with gaslighting, have been met with...
Breaking news, there are journalists at NBC News. I wasn't aware of that fact.
That the gaslighting?
That there are journalists at NBC News.
Oh, that aware. Too. Right, yeah, right, right.
But this is why they pay Chuck a lot of money, because he brings us the facts, unlike Ronald McDaniel of the RNC.
Right.
But, again, this is the same network. They have Nicole Wallace, who worked for the Bush administration, purveyor of the most consequential lie, arguably, of the 20th century, that Saddam Hussein and Iraq had WMDs and was working with al-Qaeda. I mean, that has some credibility issues right there. And then you have two White House spokespeople from the Democratic side, Jen Psaki and Simone Sanders, also hosting shows.
So yeah.
It strikes me as a little bit hypocritical.
I mean, Simone Sanders, who famously lied about the CDC findings about or the CDC recommendations during the 2020 primary, that was on CNN, not on MSNBC. But I think that showed us that she was capable of gaslighting.
I mean, that's your job to be as a spokesperson,
right,
is to gaslight, basically. But anyway, listen, but I appreciate Chuck's passion. Let's hear some more of it.
Character assassination. So it is, that's where you begin here. And so when NBC made the decision to give her NBC News' credibility, you got to ask yourself, what does she bring NBC News?
Breaking news. Chuck Todd has also revealed that NBC News has credibility.
Right.
I wasn't aware of that. I wasn't aware of that either. Again, NBC News gave us Russiagate, Havana Syndrome,
right,
Russian bounties in Afghanistan. Hunter Biden's laptop comes from Russia. You can go down the list.
But Aaron, to be fair, they then came clean, right? And they've acknowledged all their mistakes.
I missed that one too. I missed that one as well.
All right.
I missed that one as well.
And when we make deals like this, and I've been at this company a long time, you're doing it for access. Access to audience. Sometimes it's access to an individual. Mm-hmm. And we can have a journalistic ethics debate about that. And I'm willing to have that debate. And if you told me we were hiring her as a technical advisor to the Republican convention, I think that would be certainly defensible. If you told me...
What the hell does that mean?
We're talking to her, but let's...
Technical advisor? Like she's going to do IT or something?
Yeah, she's going to help us update software.
Yeah.
What
the hell does that mean?
Log into our account. Fine. Let me log into my NBC News account if I was frozen out. But no, I think that means, like, if you're covering the public convention, you want technical advice on the delegate count or something.
Okay, yeah.
Stuff I don't really understand.
Right.
Then maybe
how they're doing it in the RNC. Yeah, sure.
But I do like the IT. I do like the idea of Chuck Todd only accepting people if they can help him log into his computer.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
IT support.
Or maybe set up the lighting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. See how she does in some interviews, and maybe vet her with actual journalists inside the network. See if it's a two-way. Mm-hmm. What she can bring the network. So I do think, unfortunately.
What did Nicole Wallace bring the network?
Great question.
Was there great vetting question. To make sure it's a two-way street? Was there not gaslighting from the Bush administration?
This interview is always going to be looked through the prism of right. Who is she speaking for, right. Right? Right? I think you did everything you could do. You got put into an impossible situation booking this interview, and then all of a sudden the rugs pull out from under you. You find out she's being paid to show up. That's unfortunate for this program, but I am glad you did the best that you could, and that's why the three of us are on here to try to bolster that editorial independence.
Why?
Wait, okay. How does that bolster editorial independence, having them on there?
Yeah, and look, he's making it sound as if this is like, there was like a terrorist attack against her family or something like that. Right. Just an interview. Like, she was paid to show up to the studio along with everybody else. Like,
right.
She received the same paycheck that I do. This is just a
right.
A monstrosity. Chuck's indignant.
Yeah, this is like the one conflict of interest he thinks ever happened at MSNBC.
Yeah.
Who was Nicole Wallace speaking for? Who was Jen Psaki speaking for?
Yeah, well, Jen Psaki is clearly speaking for the Biden administration.
Right, still.
You'll never hear her criticize them, and she's constantly spinning their lies. And Chuck Todd's fine with that. I mean, again, this is the network that went all in on Russiagate, the dumbest conspiracy theory of all time, the idea that Donald Trump was being blackmailed by Vladimir Putin with compromise to do his bidding, and that Russia basically taking over the country. That was the dominant narrative on NBC News, including on Chuck Todd's show for years. And he pushed that, and he wants to sit there and pretend as if he now has credibility because Ronna McDaniel engaged in Trump's election denialism in 2020. It's very, very silly. Very,
yeah,
very
and horrible. Nicole Wallace benefited from Bush's election interference, I would say.
Yeah, well, that's the whole thing. Like, Democrats once believed that the 2000 election was stolen by George W. Bush, and
right.
I personally agree with that. But now are we supposed to Nicole Wallace was a part of that administration that came to power after stealing the election in Florida. Right. So, you know, did Chuck Todd speak out against that? I think not.
I think not. Yeah. So ridiculous. All righty. Should we go to our next clip?
Well, you wanted to show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Let's show some tweets. So Glenn Greenwald had a good tweet on this. Let's take a look at that. So this was in response to the clip that we just showed. NBC negotiated a contract with Jen Psaki while she was White House press secretary. ABC hired George Stephanopoulos directly from the Clinton White House with no journalism experience. All these networks hire operatives from the U.S. security state and never prompts this melodrama. Also, as we pointed out, Nicole Wallace went straight from the Bush administration. But then Aaron Rupar, let's see what he had to say about this. I must have missed when Jen Psaki and George Stephanopoulos worked on behalf of a coup attempt aimed at overthrowing the constitutional order. Well, that's not what Chuck Todd was saying. That wasn't the point. If you want to make it about the content of what was done under that party, again, I missed the part where Bush didn't get us into an illegal and unjust war based on lies.
And also arguably stole the election in 2000.
Yeah.
And again, Russiagate was, I think, an attempt to undermine the constitutional order by framing the president as a Russian agent. that was pretty insurrection-y. Though it didn't involve a 3-hour, it was much worse to me than a 3-hour riot on Capitol Hill. But
well, also remember when Rachel Maddow warned us about Putin freezing the grid?
Sure, of course. Yes, of course. How could we forget?
Gives me chills just thinking about it. I get cold just thinking about it.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the Gaza genocide, which Chuck Todd can take heart knowing that both parties agree on that. Right. There's no real dispute there except for at the fringes. And here is Republican Senator Marco Rubio.
Let me turn to the war in Gaza. As you know, members of the Israeli War Cabinet are here in Washington starting today, meeting with senior national security officials in the White House. I know you've been harshly critical of President Biden's approach to this and also what Senator Schumer had to say. How concerned are you that support for Israel, which had long been the ultimate bipartisan issue, has become is becoming a partisan issue?
Well, I continue to do everything I can from my end to keep it from becoming that. I'll be frank. I think the president is worried about losing Minnesota and Michigan. He's getting a lot of pressure from the pro-Hamas wing of the Democratic Party, a lot of activists and people like that.
Okay, if you're going to call them pro-Hamas, can we call you pro-genocide, part of the pro-genocide wing?
Yeah, but the difference is that that's accurate.
Right, exactly. You're
calling
right.
Genocide,
that's not
it's,
fair.
It's not a fair trade. Right. It's not a fair trade because that's he is the pro-genocide wing.
Right, right.
Whereas, I don't know, Hamas has probably 0.0% support in the U.S. It's just what he calls pro-Hamas is just people who are against genocide.
Yeah, exactly, right.
You know, he's getting heckled at speeches. He's hearing a lot of complaints. And so I think he's trying to have it both ways, still stick with Israel to some extent, but also do things that signal to these people and try to appease them.
I think he's right.
I mean, where's the lie there? Yeah.
Where's the lie?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what Joe Biden's doing. He sees that his support is cratering because he supports a genocide. And so he's doing these performative things like getting Chuck Schumer to renounce Benjamin Netanyahu and make Netanyahu the personification of the issue, but
right,
really it's
exactly.
The entire Israeli government, while still maintaining the same support for Israel. So Marco Rubio.
I'll hire you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, hire him for the news desk. Great analysis right there.
Yesterday, Secretary Blinken was overseas, protesters outside of his hotel. I saw at the State of the Union where these pro-Hamas people were trying to block the president from getting to the State of the Union. They're under a lot of political pressure, and that's what's happening here. But Israel has to win. They have 90,000 displaced.
It's crazy. Like Marco Rubio sees, like, you know, the people from Code Pink.
Right.
Palestinians who've lost family, you know, going to Capitol Hill. A lot of these people who've gone to Capitol Hill to try to confront lawmakers directly, as you've seen in the videos, are literally Palestinians who've lost family in Gaza. And Marco Rubio sees them and turns around and just sees them as pro-Hamas because they're against the killing of their own family members and their own people.
Disgusting.
But Israelis in their own country, just to-
don't worry, Aaron. The good news is he has empathy. What? Ready? He has empathy for people who have been displaced. Who have been kicked out of their homes, who aren't able to live in their homes. Ready?
They have 90,000 displaced Israelis in their own country, just in the northern region because of Hezbollah. And who's going to move back to any of these kibbutzes near Gaza unless Hamas is eliminated? You cannot have a country in which...
Oh, he cares about the refugees, the Israelis.
Oh, my God. So how many people in Gaza have lost their homes? Like, it's well over a million. It's impossible to even know the official count, but it's most of the strip at this point. And he's concerned about 90,000 Israelis in the north. And by the way, their issue is not even Hamas up there. It's Hezbollah.
Right.
And the reason Hezbollah is an issue is because Israel routinely bombs Lebanon, is also trying to destroy Gaza.
Right.
With U.S. support. But yes, he does have empathy for some displaced people. It just happens to be... the residents of the settler colony.
Exactly.
Not the indigenous people who are being exterminated.
This threat continues to exist. They have to finish this job. And this fighting can end tomorrow. You want a ceasefire in Gaza? It's very simple. Hamas just surrender. No one's calling for Hamas to surrender and lay down their arms. That would end the conflict.
Wait a second.
That would end the conflict immediately.
No one's calling for Hamas to lay down their arms. This very point about how this could end tomorrow has been made by people in the Biden administration. I mean, Kirby says that. People say that literally all the time. You want to end this now, Hamas can lay down its arms.
And actually, Hamas is offering to lay down its arms.
Right.
There's a permanent ceasefire.
Yes. Also, I like the argument that he's making, which is like, they need to lay down their arms, surrender. He's endorsing the idea that Israel has the right to kill civilians and impose collective punishment unless Hamas surrenders. That's not like actually a moral, legal way of fighting a war.
No, it's terrorism. It's terrorism. Yeah, 100%. But that is the official position of the U.S. And people from the Biden administration, as you point out, will say the exact same things, that this could all end tomorrow if Hamas just laid down its arms and released the hostages. But they don't want to accept Israel releasing its hostages, all the Palestinians in Israeli prisons, and stopping the siege of Gaza. They want to basically pause the massacre and then let it resume.
Right. So disgusting. Where are we at likes, by the way? Someone just, I saw in the comments, someone wrote, get up those likes. Where are we? You guys have to help us. We got to beat back the algorithm. Let's see.
I'm seeing 678 right now.
Oh my God. Have I taught you nothing? Nothing.
Oh,
guys, that's not even half. That's not even a third.
Would you say, Katie, that your indignation is worse than Chuck Todd's at the hiring of Ron McDaniel?
I mean, too. It's almost up there.
I'm indignant as well.
Yeah.
Very indignant.
We did get a bunch of these kind of likes from Lucy Bell, which is nice.
Well, that is nice.
Thank you for that.
Well, guys, I don't know what I'm doing wrong. The 700 Club, that's kind of funny. Get that get that number up there. Where are we up now?
To 903.
Go to that. I want 1,000. Let's get to 1,000. I'm sorry. I'm being harsh, but I really need to train you guys better. I think we can get there. Thank you, Lucy. We do appreciate the hearts, Lucy. Where are we at now?
953.
So close, guys. Are we at 1,000 yet?
I'm seeing 978, but I might be maybe behind. There we go. We did it. Thank you, everyone.
All right. Thank you. All right. Let's go back.
Silence.
All right. Now we can move on.
Well, let's go across the aisle to see if Senator Raphael Warnock can offer us a contrast to Marco Rubio. He also was asked about Gaza.
You have been outspoken on the issue of the humanitarian crisis in Gaza. According to CBS polling, it is 61% of black adults polled by CBS say Biden should encourage Israel to decrease or stop military actions. And the feelings are really strong, particularly among younger voters. Recently, we also saw 1,000 black pastors from congregations across the country issue the demand for a ceasefire. Sir, of all the issues facing the black community, why do you think this particular one is resonating in the way that it is?
I don't know. Maybe black people have experiences with racism. They don't like racism. Israel is a settler colonialist state founded on racism and ethnic cleansing and ethno supremacy.
Right.
I don't know. That could be something to do with it.
Perhaps. Let's see what he says.
Also, maybe black people just don't like seeing kids being slaughtered.
Yeah. It's a black thing, Aaron.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we in the African-American community understand human struggle. We know it when we see it. And I called for a negotiated ceasefire just a couple of weeks ago on the floor of the United States Senate. Look, the state of Israel is our ally. And they are our most important partner in the Middle East. But right now we are.
Why are they so important? Like, everyone always takes that at face value. They're our most important partner. But like, why? Like, what do they actually do except put everybody in danger and slaughter people? Like, you know, we should interrogate why they're our most important partner. Like,
well, as Biden likes to say, if they didn't exist, we'd have to make her.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. But maybe it's like, rather than accepting that premise, if you're a, you know, a progressive Democrat, as Raphael Warnock's supposed to be, why don't you challenge that?
Well, let's hear the rest of what he has to say. And then we're going to show a follow-up clip. And that's a doozy. Well, spoiler alert.
We know it when we see it. And ceasefire. Just a couple of weeks ago on the floor of the United States Senate. Look, the state of Israel is our ally, and they are our most important partner in the Middle East. But right now we are having an important conversation about principles, about American values. Mm-hmm. In a real sense, that's what's at stake.
What a completely milquetoast answer. He says absolutely nothing. We're having a conversation about American values. Right. Okay, like what do those values include? Opposing genocide and not being complicit in it, maybe?
Yeah.
Well, by the way, he just voted for the Senate's latest measure to defund UNRWA,
right,
the UN agency serving Palestinian refugees, and
absolutely disgusting decision.
Giving more money to arm Israel.
Right. So
every time Senator Warnock's had an opportunity to vote on this, along with most Democrats, he's voted to fuel the genocide.
In fact, he's going to make that clear in the next clip.
In terms of what the U.S. can control, the question of U.S. military support for Israel is being debated within your party, as you know. Just yesterday, 11 organizations who operate in Gaza, including the Episcopal Church, Oxfam, Save the Children, issued a letter saying the humanitarian response in Gaza, including U.S.-funded humanitarian assistance, has been consistently and arbitrarily denied, restricted, and impeded by the Israeli authorities. Do you worry that continuing to provide American weapons to Israel will sacrifice moral authority? And do you believe that the Biden administration should suspend arms transfers?
I don't understand why you have to presume in a question that we have any moral authority.
I know. I was like, that ship has sailed.
Yeah.
Margaret.
Yeah. It's like, no matter what happens, the U.S. always has moral authority.
Right.
And it's never squandered. It's like, at what point do you stop accepting the premise that you have any moral authority to begin with?
Yeah. You know? For her, maybe it is. I mean, to be fair, maybe it is squandered now for her or at the risk of being squandered. But that ignores history, recent history. And it's too late for it to not be. I mean, it's gone. It's gone.
Yeah, but like, why do we assume that any state has a moral authority,
right,
especially the world's top hegemon, which has done so many horrible things? But it's like, you know, you could, if this goes on, God forbid,
right,
another whatever, how many tens of thousands of more people die? Like, are we going to get in 6 months hosts being like, do you think we're almost at risk of losing our moral authority? You know, there's like two Palestinians left in Gaza. Do you think we might? No, we might be at risk of losing our moral authority if those last two people are killed.
Right.
You know.
Listen, Israel lives in a dangerous neighborhood, and its enemies are more than just Hamas. There are serious and geopolitical concerns that we have to pay attention to. But look, we can walk and chew gum at the same time. We can be.
Anytime you hear someone saying that, they're going to be advocating a horrible position.
Right.
We can walk and chew gum at the same time. So what he's saying here is we can arm Israel's genocide while also letting a trickle of aid in, more than the zero aid that's being allowed right now. That's what he's saying.
Consistent in our support of Israel's right to defend itself, and at the same time be true to American values, and engage this catastrophic humanitarian situation that's on the ground. We have a security supplemental right now that's already passed the Senate, and it hasn't been put on the floor of the House. That security supplemental will provide humanitarian aid to the people of Gaza. It will support our partners in the Indo-Pacific arena.
Yes.
And it will also check Russian aggression in Ukraine.
Okay. But I hear you stopping short of saying it should stop transfers. 17 Democratic senators have said the administration should reject Israel's claims that it's not violating international law. You're not comfortable with that statement?
I am saying that we have to continue to engage our partner and to ensure that humanitarian aid gets to the people of Gaza.
Yeah.
And ultimately, we need a ceasefire.
Okay. Sir,
what a complete disgrace. What a complete disgrace. He repeats this trope about Israel living in a dangerous neighborhood when Israel is hands down a threat to everybody surrounding it, including itself.
Yeah.
Because it's a fanatical settler colonial state, an occupying power, which, of course, you can't even mention. You can't mention that Israel's occupying the West Bank and Gaza, the longest running military occupation in the world. You can't mention that. And he repeats this thing that in that context, Israel's right to defend itself.
Right. What the hell does that mean? Is this self-defense? Blowing up a fucking, blowing up an orphanage is self-defense?
Yeah. It's really shameful. And he used to, back when he was, before he joined the Senate and he was just a pastor. He used to say some, you know, nice things about Palestinian rights. But that's just an example of when you get into Washington, completely corrupts your soul. He talks about values. I mean, he can't even stand up to genocide. So he's completely corrupted his.
Can we, by the way, before we do the next clip, can we play the second Marco Rubio clip? I think we skipped that by accident. There's something good there.
I want to play you something that President Trump said this week about Democrats and Israel. Take a listen.
Any Jewish person that votes for Democrats hates their religion, they hate everything about Israel, and they should be ashamed of themselves because Israel will be destroyed.
I assume you don't agree with that.
Well, I think that there's an argument. There's a difference between being, you know, pro-Israel, and there are people, you know, being your religion and being pro-Israel can be two separate things. And then there's people that are pro-Israel but maybe don't like Netanyahu or what have you. At the end of the day, my view of it is pretty consistent, and that is that if you are out here, if you are claiming, if you are on the side of anyone who wants Israel to stop, in my view, given the realities of the world, if you want Israel to stop, what it basically means is that Hamas will continue to be able to threaten Israel, and so will Hezbollah. This is not a fight over land. This is not a territorial dispute. This is an existential battle. And anyone who doesn't understand that is, frankly, whether they know it or not, an enemy of Israel, or at least on the side of what could lead to the destruction of the Jewish state. And that is something that I think is untenable. And I hope people will reconsider that are out there arguing that Israel should somehow stop at this point.
So a couple of things. One is that I like Trump's line reminds me of when Biden told black voters that if they didn't vote for Biden, they weren't black. I believe his exact word was, "You ain't black." Mm-hmm. Trump's claim is a little bit harder to does more heavy lifting or requires more heavy lifting because most Jews are Democrats. So that makes it a little harder. I guess there's a real epidemic of Jewish self-loathing, according to Trump. But what I like about this response is that Rubio's take is obviously more nuanced than Trump's in terms of you don't have to be self-loathing. He kind of separates whether or not you hate your own religion from your position on Israel. But it's also more nuanced than the director of the Anti-Defamation League, the ADL. Let's take a look at this tweet. So just the Jonathan Greenblatt, the screenshot. So this guy went on a whole spiel defending his wife. But the point is, he wrote, Haviv Redinger wrote, "There's no whinier human alive than the anti-Zionist Jews, most of them probably fake." Okay, so most anti-Zionist Jews are probably fake. And Jonathan Greenblatt of the ADL goes like this, points down and says this.
Mm-mm.
Disgusting. Wow.
Yeah, the whole thing, what Trump is playing into, and these guys are too, it's very anti-Semitic to say that, you know, your Judaism is tied to your support for a state, an ethno-state.
Right. It's making it look like we're this monolith that we all support Israel, and it leans into and perpetuates the dual loyalty trope, which is very anti-Semitic.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
They don't care.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right, speaking of Israel genocide, let's take a look at this clip of AOC talking to Jake Tapper.
I gave a very forceful speech on the House floor Friday about the humanitarian crisis in Gaza. You called on President Biden to cut off U.S. military aid to Israel. I think we have a clip of part of what you said. Let's roll that.
If you want to know what an unfolding genocide looks like, open your eyes. It looks like the forced famine of 1.1 million innocents. We must write our story in this moment of what it means and who we are as Americans. And our story must be not that we were good men who did nothing.
Now,
you know, it was a good speech, and I just want to credit the activists who confronted AOC. I don't know if you saw that clip of in a movie theater in Brooklyn, I believe. Some people saw her there and confronted her and called her for not calling this a genocide. And she claimed that she had called it a genocide. But I think this speech underscores that at that point she hadn't, because this speech was marked as the first time she's called it a genocide.
Right.
And good for her for doing that. It's too late, but better late than never.
Yeah.
But I think that's an example of how activism works. I mean, you know, I think that certainly just that showed the people that she hadn't called it a genocide yet, and that might have helped galvanize her to call it out now. So good for those activists for, as AOC once said, you know, making politicians uncomfortable. That's the point of activism. And it worked.
Clearly, not enough aid is getting in. Clearly, the conditions for the Palestinian people are horrific and much more needs to be done.
I love that line, not enough aid is getting in. Why is that, Jake? Exactly. Why is not enough aid getting in? They love it. It's their new talking point. Okay.
Genocide is a word that has serious and specific connotations and allegations. It's defined by the intent to destroy in whole or in part a national, ethnic, racial, or religious group. So you, just to clarify here, you believe the Israeli military, the Israeli government are actively trying, they intend to destroy the Palestinian people, and not that what's happening is horrible, but it's happening because Israel is going after the terrorists of Hamas who attacked them on October 7th, and Hamas embeds within the civilian population?
Like, does he get his talking points right from Israel? Does AIPAC give them directly, or does Netanyahu give them directly? I mean, did he not read the, I guess, of course he didn't, the ICJ case? Has he not heard quote after quote after quote of Israeli officials laying out their genocidal intent?
Clearly, you know, a population's being starved. They're being bombarded and massacred, more than 13,000 children. And clearly, Israeli officials have said they're going to cut off all the food and aid to Gaza and wipe everybody out and destroy the entire Gaza Strip. But clearly, this is all the fault of Hamas, right? This is just Hamas's fault. Yeah,
they're just targeting terrorists and Hamas embeds. I mean, the whole Hamas embeds the civilians talking point is so disingenuous. And you don't actually... The moral way to respond to that, if it were true, and it's not true, but if it were true, that's why then you don't bomb a hospital or an orphanage.
Yeah, and also, I mean, the reason Hamas is around civilians is because they're all confined to a concentration camp.
Right.
Like, if you gave Palestinians freedom of movement and the right to self-determination, you wouldn't have Hamas being next to civilian areas. I mean... They're all in a death camp.
Right. Where can they go?
Yeah. And Hamas has the right to resist that occupation, no matter what you think of them. But Jake just can't comprehend that. Yes. And his job is to basically be a snitch and try to guilt AOC into intimidate her into retracting her statement. But she gives a very good answer here.
You know what, Jake? I would say listen to Israelis. Believe Israelis. They've made their genocidal intent clear, and you shouldn't be gaslighting them.
That's right.
Well, Jake, you're absolutely right. This word is extremely serious. It's one that's taken with extraordinary gravity. And to me, the threshold of intent is a high one. It is a serious one and is not one that is made lightly. However, when we look at the precipice of what is happening, with a forced famine of 1.1 million Gazans, where multiple governments, NGOs, and even officials within the United States State Department have stated themselves plainly that the Israeli government and leaders in the Israeli government are intentionally denying, blocking, and slow walking this aid and are precipitating a mass famine, I believe we have crossed the threshold of intent. It is horrific. I think it is extremely clear and it is extremely important that all people understand the difference between people and their governments, Israelis and the Israeli government, Palestinians from Hamas.
Unfortunately, Israelis all support the slaughter of Palestinians. That's an inconvenient truth, but it is. Yeah.
She's being way too generous to Israelis there, unfortunately, but I understand the point she's trying to make.
Yeah.
Yeah. But literally, you know, on the same day that Jake is asking this question about how, you know, isn't this all Hamas's fault? UNRWA, the UN agency for Palestinian refugees, said that Israel was totally blocking its aid convoys to the north. It would not allow anything from UNRWA into the strip. So it's just the fact that you can sit there and pretend that this is like Hamas's fault.
Right.
When Israel's openly flaunting its denial of basic aid is very it's for Jake Tapper. It's even surprising, but I guess I shouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. The one time Jake Tapper actually thought that Israel was doing something problematic was when it was the family of a producer at CNN was killed. And he had Mark Regev on. And he's like, where are they supposed to go? But I guess he, as his talking points have been refurbished, I guess that weird popping up of empathy, his empathy has been suppressed. And now he's back to just being a, you know, a mouthpiece for Israel, basically.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're also someone who's receiving a CNN check, then Jake Tapper will be able to recognize you as human.
Right. That's true. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're a Palestinian, a CNN check confers humanity. But unfortunately, 2.2 million people in Gaza don't work for CNN.
Maybe that's what we need to do is we need to give Gazans jobs at CNN.
Jake could probably care there until AIPAC told him not to.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly.
The Israeli government, Palestinians from Hamas. But what we are seeing here, I think, with a forced famine is beyond our ability to deny or explain away. There is no targeting of Hamas in precipitating a mass famine of 1 million people, half of whom are children.
So I asked Israeli officials about your speech, and they say we are allowing hundreds of aid trucks into Gaza.
I asked Israeli officials about your speech and also asked them what I should say in response to your speech because they give me my talking points.
Right.
Yeah.
Every single day, they're trying to increase those numbers. They have to inspect the cargo to make sure no weapons are getting in, weapons that would be used by Hamas against the people of Israel. They also, Israeli officials also argue, this war could end tomorrow if Hamas freed the hostages and laid down the arms. Do you disagree?
Fucking.
I do disagree because when we are talking about famine, the actions of Hamas should not be tied to whether a three-year-old can eat. The actions of Hamas do not justify forcing thousands, hundreds of thousands of people to eat grass as their bodies consume themselves. We and the Israeli government has a right to go after Hamas. But we are talking about a population of millions of innocent Palestinians. We are talking about collective punishment, which is unjustifiable. And the excuses that the Israeli government is giving about what they are and are not allowing simply do not square with what the UK government is stating, with what international aid organizations are stating, and even what our own State Department officials are stating, which is that they are not allowing aid to go through. When they're talking about inspections, we're talking about US aid, the United States aid. And so I think that if we are to operate as allies, then we must operate in good faith to uphold the principles of democracy, which includes respect for human rights and also proving the value of our democracy, which is that we are different than authoritarian and we are different from other types of regimes with no regard for innocent people.
I mean, a pretty good answer, you know, like what does Hamas have? Like nothing Hamas does can justify starving children, forcing them to eat grass. It's a good answer.
It is.
I also wish you could acknowledge that, you know, Israel doesn't have the right to go after Hamas. Israel is an occupying power. Occupying powers don't have self-defense rights. They have obligations to end the occupation. But I understand it's really difficult to be a member of Congress and make that argument. So, you know, this is the best we can get. And it's a good answer.
She did a good job. Yeah. I asked my handlers about your speech. I asked my interlocutors. You know, the guys who give me that. I'm just thinking about how funny it is that he said that out loud.
Oh, yeah. No, of course. Of course. Well, I mean, how else does he do his research? Right. He just, you know, asks his friends in the Israeli government, in the Israeli lobby, and he repeats their talking points.
I rolled over in bed and asked them.
Okay. Let's move on to this recent attack in Moscow at a concert hall, reportedly carried out by ISIS-K. In the aftermath, Vladimir Putin suggested that Ukraine might be involved, and Kamala Harris not having it.
Mm-mm. Interview with ABC's Rachel Scott. Vice President Kamala Harris weighed in on Putin's suggestion of a possible Ukraine connection to the attack.
Vladimir Putin is already trying to link this to Ukraine and say that Ukraine is responsible. Does the U.S. have any evidence to back that up?
No. And first, let me start by saying what has happened in an act of terrorism and the number of people who've been killed is obviously a tragedy, and we should all send our condolences to those families. No, there is no whatsoever any evidence. And in fact, what we know to be the case is that ISIS-K is actually, by all accounts, responsible for what happened.
Notice how she
says...
We'll
have more of Rachel's interview with the vice president later in the...
It's interesting how that that reporter says Putin has already said that Ukraine may be involved. And I'm pointing that out because of another clip we're going to see shortly, but... A little foreshadowing. Okay, so they're saying that Kamala Harris is like one of the only people I've heard actually offer any condolences, by the way, to the people of Russia.
Yeah, and she didn't even fully, she said we should send condolences.
Right, yeah.
But she's like, but she doesn't actually say I'm sending condolences.
Yeah, that's maybe, true, right.
Maybe yeah. That's the distinction without a difference, but
yeah.
Okay, let's hear from
friend of Mike, show.
Mike McCall. Oh, Mike McFaul. Mike McFaul.
Even better. He's the guy who said that at least Hitler didn't go after German-speaking people. Remember that? Right. That special, right. That gem?
Yeah. So here's former U.S. ambassador to Russia, Michael McFaul.
I don't want to overcrank this, but I think it's important to talk about. I mean, Putin didn't mention.
What does overcrank mean?
Let's circle back to that, Aaron. Let's circle back to the overcrank.
Okay. ISIS-K in his remarks, he pinned some blame on the Ukrainians. What did you make of Putin's initial response to what was obviously a horrific attack where over 100 lives were lost?
Well, first, it was a horrific attack, and I want to express my condolences to all family and friends who lost loved ones. Terrorism is never justified, and this was a horrific terrorist attack, the biggest one in 20 years in Russia. Second, the thing that was first striking to me about Putin's reaction is how long it took. He didn't come out right away. He took some time to figure out the way they wanted to spin it.
Wait a second. I thought the problem was that he already came out blaming Ukraine. Now his problem is that he took too long. And I have a feeling if Putin had come out right away saying this, McFaul would have had a problem with that. There's literally no way he could do this. That would be okay.
And then when he did make his statement, just as you just reported, he didn't mention ISIS-K. He didn't talk about that particular organization, which, by the way, they've had troubles with for a long time. It would have been easy to explain to the Russian people why that kind of terrorist group would have attacked them. But instead, did this signal, this window was open for them to leave to Ukraine, you know, and think about how strange that is. For a window to be open in Ukraine for them to pass, that means a window would have to be open through Russia's military forces on the front line for them to pass. And subsequently, there is this echo chamber to blame Ukraine. And I find this just...
What happened to
that? Oh, well, we lost Michael's sound, but... What he's saying is,
I find this absolutely disgusting. Yeah.
He's outraged that Putin could exploit this tragedy to blame Ukraine and justify his war effort. And fair enough. I mean, you know, I've seen evidence that Ukraine was involved, and Putin suggested they were trying to cross into Ukraine, and so that shows that Ukraine might be involved. But first of all, I mean, there's actually no evidence to me yet that they were actually trying to go to Ukraine. They were just headed towards the border region, but the region also includes Belarus. So for all I know, they could have been trying to go there. And also, it just makes sense. If you commit a terror attack, you're going to try to flee the country. And if you're going to flee the country, you might as well go to a country that's at war with the country you just attacked. If that's even what they were trying to do. So I think McFaul actually raises a fair point there. But to criticize Russia for exploiting a tragedy to warmonger, I mean, that's what the U.S., including McFaul, do all the time.
Right. Like,
anything
that's
is
their job, though, Aaron. That's their lane.
But anything is an excuse, for example, to fight Russia. When Russia was accused of stealing some Democratic Party emails in 2016 with the whole Russiagate thing, people were calling that an act of war and that we have to stand up to Russia, including Michael McFaul. So, you know, it takes one to know one.
Yeah, but he's just disgusted.
All right. We are running out of time, so
which one should we prioritize?
We might want to skip a couple. Let's check in on Tom Cotton. Why not?
Okay.
Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas, like McFaul, reliable warmonger. And this was his reaction to the attack in Moscow.
Well, as a reminder, this is the video that we saw just days ago of what's happening at our U.S. southern border. And the fact is, we've got new numbers from CBP. They came in late in the week. They talk about a record high for a February number, and also that up to 70 people on an FBI terror watch list have been arrested this year alone. We don't know if any of those people got deported. None of our reporters can determine that a single one was. But the administration is saying that you guys are the reason this is happening. DHS Secretary America said Saturday on X.
Oh, my bad. This is not about the Moscow attack. This is about the border.
It's all related.
Congress has to do more to support our frontline workforce, including passing the bipartisan border security bill. He says it would fix the asylum system, give our department needed tools to better enforce the laws of the border, fight cartels, and stop fentanyl from entering the country. He's pointing the finger at you.
Well, Shannon, the only person responsible for the chaos at our border is Joe Biden. In 2020, he said that he would reverse all of President Trump's highly effective policies. That sent a signal to everyone around the world that if you got to our border, you could get in. That's exactly what he did on day one. And we had more illegal crossings in 2021 than we had had in any previous year, and again in 22, and again in 23. That has nothing to do with a bill that Congress may or may not pass in the spring of 2024. This chaos at our border, 10 million illegal migrants crossing into our country's border over the last 3+ years, is solely the responsibility of Joe Biden.
Well, you know, Democrats in the Senate are blaming you guys, too, not surprisingly. There's some tensions late Friday, early into Saturday, as you have passed this new round of appropriations bills. A little back and forth with you and Senator John Tester, Democrat out of Montana. New York Post has this. They quote him saying, "Republicans are the ones that killed the best immigration bill we've ever had on the floor of the Senate." Senator Tom Cotton, however, told reporters that Tester was privately telling members he didn't want to vote on amendments. Many of those had to do with the border. "That's BS," he said. We're censoring that for morning TV. Tester spokesman also called that accusation.
All right. I think we can move on from this. This is basically the border brawl. Who can be tougher on undocumented people? Not much to say there. It's pretty self-evident. Let's move on to Congressman Michael McCaul, not to be confused with Michael McFaul, the former U.S. ambassador to Russia.
Although you can pretty much confuse them, but
same policies, different parties, same policies.
Yeah,
and he's hopeful that Ukraine proxy warriors are finally going to get their $61 billion, because House Speaker Mike Johnson has been dragging his feet on that. But in Washington, neocons always win, and he thinks that Johnson finally will allow a vote on that very soon.
Speaker Johnson. So has Speaker Johnson given you any timeline for a vote on Ukraine aid, given that they are running out of ammunition?
His commitment is to put it on the floor after Easter, and we are working on this bill.
So as soon as you all come back April 9th?
I would like to be done as soon as possible. I think the situation in Ukraine is dire. The front lines if we lose in Ukraine like Afghanistan and lose to Putin, let him, take over Ukraine and Moldova, Georgia, and abandon our allies like we did in Afghanistan, does that make the United States weaker or stronger? Well, I think weaker.
Why isn't there that sense of urgency on the speaker's part? I mean, respectfully.
I mean, why does this choice have to be abandon our allies or grind them? And to, use them as cannon fodder. Why can't it be, helping with negotiations? There's like no middle ground. It's like pouring billions of dollars of aid into Ukraine or abandoning our allies like Afghanistan.
Yeah. And again, the aid is not aid. It's
weapons. Right.
And it's money going to the military industrial complex. And no one ever discussed the possibility, which I'm not even sure is possible anymore at this point.
Right.
Because Russia
certainly was.
It was. It has been for a long time. I mean, there's been so many opportunities. I mean, Putin has said recently he's open to negotiations still, but whatever terms he would propose are going to be worse for Ukraine than they could have had before, when there were real opportunities to avoid this war and then end it after it began, as we've discussed so many times on this show. But again, none of that is true. None of that is an option. None of that is history. The history of U.S. sabotaging negotiations, you can't even mention it. It's all just war. And why aren't we pouring more money into this war?
This has been stuck in the House for weeks. You have been warning about this. It needs to be acted on.
He understands this. He is in a very difficult spot. And this, you know, motion to vacate the chair thing, I believe he's committed because he understands national security. He leans on, you know, myself, the chairman of Armed Services, House Intelligence, for advice on this. And he knows how important this is.
Thank God. Thank God the speaker is listening to Congress's biggest warmongers for advice. That's very, very encouraging.
Very reassuring.
And again, what you also can't mention is that a majority of Republican voters oppose more spending right. on the Ukraine proxy war. So maybe they're actually, maybe, I mean, I don't think actually Mike Johnson really cares, but right. maybe some people in the Republican Party care about listening to their own voters.
That would make them, that would be very shocking to me, yeah. but it's a nice idea, Aaron.
Okay. We want to do maybe a little TikTok.
Yeah, let's get some TikTok action
okay.
while we can.
All right. Well, while we're even allowed to discuss it, maybe they'll ban us from discussing it soon as well. Because, of course, right now, moving through Congress is this ban on TikTok, which
it's not a ban, Aaron. It's not a ban.
I'm sorry. It's a
prohibition.
Prohibition. I'm sorry. Yes, a prohibition. A forced closure. And everyone's on board with it, including Kamala Harris.
Of course.
About TikTok. I want to ask you also about TikTok. We know that bill cleared the House. You have expressed national security concerns over TikTok. So has the president. Why does your campaign then have a TikTok account where you're encouraging Americans to follow it?
So let's start with this. We do not intend to ban TikTok. That is not at all the goal or the purpose of this conversation. We need to deal with the owner. And we have national security concerns about the owner of TikTok, but we have no intention to ban TikTok. In fact, what it serves in terms of it's an income generator for many people, what it does in terms of allowing people to share information in a free way and a way that allows people to have discourse is very important. But we do have concerns about the national security implications of the owner of TikTok, and that has been our position in terms of what I think we need to do to address those concerns.
The ban could happen if its Chinese parent company does not sell the app. Should your campaign stay on TikTok with those national security concerns that you're voicing?
Awkward. Well, we'll address that when we come to it. But right now, we are concerned about the owner of TikTok.
We'll address that when we come to it because the ban we want to impose hasn't happened yet. So therefore, we're going to keep our account open.
Right. We're going
to reach as many people as possible while right. they're still allowed to use it.
Very I thought hypocritical. It was so dangerous, though.
Yeah.
And the national security implications, we do not intend to ban TikTok. And we understand its purpose and its utility and the enjoyment that it gives a lot of folks.
Well, the enjoyment it gives a lot of folks cannot match the enjoyment it gives the folks in the White House and the National Security State in centering it because right. it's saying the wrong things. And again, you know, there's been reporting on this. The effort to ban TikTok really picked up steam after October 7th.
Exactly.
Like without October 7th. Without October 7th, I don't think this ban would be moving, at least right now, at the pace that it is, because right. both parties are outraged that the kids, young people on TikTok, are sharing pro-Palestine, anti-genocide right. content, and therefore it has to be shut down.
Yeah, we know, because friend of show who we just mentioned earlier, Jonathan Greenblatt, was upset about Israel's TikTok problem.
There we go.
That's
yes.
how you deal with it.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, do we want more Tom Cotton or can we stomach him? He's just so insufferable.
Yeah, sure, why not?
Okay, let's hear a little Tom Cotton on this.
And first of all, funding for Israel aid. There's a giant package the White House wants it all passed together. There's talk in the House they may split it into separate different pieces. But we know that Secretary Anthony Blinken is in the Middle East. He's coming back now, but he's had this conversation with Bibi Netanyahu saying, we don't want you to go into Rafah and there are all kinds of other problems we have. Here's the secretary.
It risks killing more civilians. It risks wreaking greater havoc with the provision of humanitarian assistance. It risks further isolating Israel around the world and jeopardizing its long-term security and standing.
So what about those short and long-term impacts, potentially what Israel is doing now, hindering the possibility of getting to peace long-term? And shouldn't allies and friends be able to have these difficult conversations?
Shannon, we're fewer than 6 months past the worst attack on Jews since the Holocaust. We should back Israel to the hilt in their existential war against.
I mean, that comparison to the Holocaust is so offensive because it's Israel that's acting like a Nazi regime,
right,
in besieging a death camp and slaughtering tens of thousands of people. That's Nazi behavior. And second of all, October 7th didn't happen because Israelis are Jews. It happened because Israelis are occupying,
right,
and besieging Palestine.
Yeah.
And so it's just this talking point really needs to go. So, it's so, so offensive, offensive for so many reasons.
Hamas. That includes rooting out the Hamas terrorists and leaders who are now hiding in Rafah. And Joe Biden and Tony Blinken and Chuck Schumer, rather than blaming Benjamin Netanyahu and putting pressure on him, should be helping the Israeli government put pressure on Hamas, not only to win this war, but also help bring back those hostages, some of whom are American hostages. It's very disappointing to see Joe Biden and Chuck Schumer apparently more concerned about placating the growing anti-Semitic faction in their party than helping an ally like Israel win this war.
More than a million.
I mean, it's so crazy that you have like Joe Biden doing everything he can to arm the genocide and performatively sometimes criticizing Netanyahu just to like try to like rescue Biden's own reelection campaign. And Tom, like the Republican criticism is that Biden is somehow being soft on Hamas, like, and he's not supportive of Israel enough when Biden's done everything he can to arm Israel. That's our political spectrum right now. It's like both parties in lockstep with Israel. The Republicans just want to be even more outwardly supportive of Israel and its genocide than the Democrats. That's our political spectrum.
We do have some breaking news, by the way, which is that the UN Security Council has just approved its first ever resolution demanding an immediate ceasefire in Gaza with the notable abstention of the United States.
Wow. Okay, well, there we go. So that
170
actually
170 days in.
Yes. We'll have to read the full text to see if the U.S. got something in there to water it down, which,
right,
I wouldn't be surprised if they did, but calling for an immediate ceasefire is significant. And for the first time, the U.S. has not vetoed it.
Right.
Whether they'll put any of their own effort behind it, like, for example, they'll cut off weapons to Israel, it's a safe bet they won't. But if that's the language and it's not, there's not some caveat that the U.S. slipped in to water it down, then that's significant.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, too late, obviously, but that is significant.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, of course, this should have been the policy on day one.
Of course.
There should have been a negotiated release of the captives on both sides and an end to the occupation. And so many people could have not been killed, and so much in Gaza would not be leveled as it is right now with U.S. support. But
right.
That is significant. I think that the U.S. has abstained. It's the first time they have not vetoed such a measure. That's important. Wow. All right. Well, let's leave it there. Thanks
and
for
thank
watching,
you
everybody.
For who pointed that out? I'm sorry, I missed it. Someone in the comments pointed that out. If it was you, there you go. So smart, so stupid. More so smart today. Thank you for pointing that out. Because that, yeah.
And all right.
Thanks, everyone. Yep. See you guys next week. Bye, everyone.
Bye.